To the Batmobile.
Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard?
And Sophie Lai.
It's Geeks time, which means it's time for the Gaggle of Geeks podcast. I'm Sophie Lai, also known as the host of So Hot Right Now, joined by, as ever, Blake Howard.
How are you?
Oh, doing all right. You sound like you're out and about.
I am. I'm in Melbourne. I'm recording that Sophie's contacting me from another state, folks.
That's how dedicated we are to Gaggle of Geeks.
Look. That's right, making a call. And look, we've got a lot to talk about. One of the biggest geek movies of the year finally is out. It is
Uno.
So, Solo, A Star Wars Story, we have talked about it many times on Gaggle of Geeks. If you just want to run down, it is the origin story of Harrison Ford's inimitable, amazing and iconic rogue and rascal Han Solo, starting out his life on his home planet of Corellia as an orphan and seeing how he starts the outlaw life, being drawn into a criminal crew led by Woody Harrelson, joining forces with a little guy who we may have seen before in The Empire Strikes Back, played by Billy Dee Williams, now played by Donald Glover, Lando Calrissian, and the unification, the birth of one of the greatest cinematic bromances of all time, Han and Chewie. Let's not forget that.
Never.
And so we get this movie that actually comes together pretty well, after a hell of a lot of controversy behind the scenes, which Soph and I have covered deeply on Gaggle of Geeks, changes of directors, things being cut, people being recast. And Soph and I went to the midnight screening on Wednesday in Sydney together to see it.
Yeah, we're nerds like that, aren't we?
Just geeks, we sure are.
Geeks like that.
Soph and I went, like Han and Chewie, together to see this movie. I'm Chewie, clearly much hairier than Soph. She's Han Solo.
Yay!
So look. Let's start with this. Any movie that has the Millennium Falcon and Chewbacca, for me as a film critic, and this is where I wear my subjectivity on my sleeve, should instantly mean that that movie is 2 stars. Instantly.
Right.
Before I've even seen a frame of the movie, my blood has been so poisoned by George Lucas's amazing Star Wars universe that if I hear the words Chewbacca and see him and hear the and see a Millennium Falcon, I should literally be immediately colored and swayed in the positive.
But
this movie is a safe, boring, and essentially Ready Player One's the Han Solo story into this big masturbatory love letter to George Lucas and Star Wars fandom that over and again, every single moment that it tries to be something that itself, it reflects back and throws in some piece of Star Wars fanboyism, some line, some freaking reference, some Easter egg that just bored me to death. In a movie with Chewbacca and the Millennium Falcon, I felt nothing, Soph. Felt nothing. And look, occasionally it looks good. It's got some quite well-positioned shots. You know, it doesn't really look and feel like a Star Wars movie in the same way I would, in my mind, that Rogue One didn't really look and feel like a Star Wars movie in some elements. You know, there was some visual inventiveness. You know, some of the characters are quite well cast. I think, you know, Donald Glover, who everyone's been raving about as Lando, is way more cute than he is outstanding. Alden Ehrenreich, you know, he's a competent Han Solo, but, you know, Harrison Ford is inimitable. So he was pushing shit uphill from the beginning. I should be the target audience for this movie. You know, a guy with issues and... daddy issues, particularly struggling with what goodness is and sort of a little bit of self-doubt. But I just didn't like this movie at all. So talk to me.
Okay, so for me, it was just like everyone, like I came back from the midnight screening and I was like, That was so not worth a midnight screening at all. Like, I stayed up for this. Like, it was fun. It was a fun action romp, but I didn't feel anything. Like, I just went home and was like, oh, yeah, I saw that. Like, that's something I would play before I'd go to bed to, like, you know, softly get me to sleep. It was just so meh. And as you mentioned, like, I was really looking forward to seeing Donald Glover as young Lando Calrissian. Like, I started, like, you know, poking your ribs once they started, like, you know, zooming into him, like, oh, my God, Blake is here. But I actually found his performance quite underwhelming.
Yes, ditto.
Like, everyone's raving about it. I was like, oh, it was all right. I wasn't getting the full Donald experience. I got that watching, like, This Is America. I'd rather watch that, like, you know, 20 times over to make up the lost time that I did watching this film.
Yeah. Agree. And I think what the problem that Soph and I may have, and this is something that the Star Wars universe, you know, this might break me away from the fandom, which is, number one, I'm sick of all this navel-gazing bullshit. We're about to, you know, talk about Boba Fett movie being greenlit, the wonderful James Mangold being a part of it. I'm just sick of looking back and giving the secret histories of characters that we do moderately know about in order to pad out a sort of retrofit a Star Wars cinematic universe together. For me, I mean, this movie is fine. And, you know, we don't usually do scores all that often for reviews, but I think it's really apt. So, you know, a fine movie score, a movie that's fine or good or a fun action romp, would probably be a 3.5-star movie.
Mm.
So,
I'd say it
would be a 3.5-star. But take away 1 star for Chewbacca because I felt nothing. Take away another star for a Millennium Falcon, and you get my score. It was 1.5 out of 5 at best. Wow. I'm never going to watch this again. I have no desire to watch it again. No desire to watch Rogue One again. I would way rather watch Force Awakens.
Oh, we're going to do this again, aren't we? Okay, I really enjoyed Rogue One. And the thing I enjoyed about this film was the characters I didn't know. So Phoebe Waller-Bridge as L3, the droid, I thought was brilliant.
Until spoilers. Look, we can't talk about that. So we can't talk about Phoebe Waller-Bridge in an isolation because we were going to want to spoil her fate, because that's, for me, where it completely kills it. Yeah, look.
Like, she's brilliant, but if you haven't seen the other stuff, Fleabag and Killing Eve.
Fleabag. Amazing.
Brilliant stuff. So check out her stuff. But it was, like, for me, for Rogue One, it was following a bunch of characters I had never met before. I know all these characters in Solo. I did not feel invested in them, even though I know them. While Rogue One, I was like, there was emotional punch in that. I know you're going to disagree with me on that, Blake, but Rogue One as an anthology story, I thought it was brilliantly done, as you would call it, a navel-gazing film. But this one, it was just, hey, let's just wank off all the fanboys.
That is exactly what it is. There's nothing more to say. Look, I think Rogue One probably pips this absolutely over the top because, again, it's exploring new stories and it's being brave enough to take the universe forward. And I think that's the crippling reflexive way that George Lucas started this whole journey, going back with the prequels, really. It's just really the mode of the universe at the moment, when it should be going farther forward. It should be pushing into sequels. It should be coming, you know, full circle with stories and then moving into new characters. I just hate this looking back.
We know. So how do you feel about Boba Fett?
Look, James Mangold is an incredible filmmaker. He's written and directed some wonderful films. Copland. He did the Wolverine before he did Logan. He's just an incredible writer and filmmaker, and him doing a Star Wars movie as in isolation is exciting, but it's Boba Fett and I don't give a shit.
I was going to say, because you said the exact same thing about Gareth Reynolds before Rogue One came out.
Look, I don't care. I just don't care. I'm like, I would see 10 other movies that James Mangold made before a Star Wars movie. If he made another random cop movie, if he made a western like 310 to Yuma, he did the amazing remake of 310 to Yuma, if he did that, I'm in. But I just have no desire whatsoever to see a Boba Fett movie. But I'm going to see it. This is what geeks do. We're sort of these weird, self-flagellating, obsessives who end up going to see these movies when maybe we don't. And I'll have extremely low expectations walking in there. But I won't go to hate it from the outset. I definitely didn't want to hate Solo. No. Guys, I've hated on Ron Howard talking about Heat and comparing it to Heat, which it wasn't. comparing it to Thief, which it wasn't, which is dumb. We've hated on Kasdan saying that Lando's pansexual. Well, show me sucking a robot's dick. Show me. I really wanted to like Solo. Like, I have deeply ingrained memories of bombing around with my brother's original Star Wars Millennium Falcon and getting in trouble for flying it too dangerously through the house. And now, I was made for this. This movie was made for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it.
I was saying to you right after the film, like, when The Force Awakens and we saw the Millennium Falcon again, there was, like, a huge rush of emotion, like, you know, and everyone just grabbed whoever was sitting next and was like, oh, my God, it's back. And you thought that you would feel that when, like, you know, Han first got on the Millennium Falcon in this film, and it was just like, oh, that's nice for you.
Nah.
It was just nothing. Just no emotion, no nothing at all. What can you do?
Well, we're not going to end on anything high here, really, guys, which sucks. The other big news this week was we've had another couple of people on our Gaggle of Geek shit list this week.
Hang on, Blake. We need to be official about this.
You are officially on my shit list!
Number one, which is actually this is the good news. Harvey Weinstein, the perverted, psychopathic asshole, douchebag that he is, has been arrested. So, just good news.
Handed himself in, finally.
So after, you know, countless accusations of sexual abuse, career manipulation, and now just flat-out rape, particularly at the Cannes Film Festival, he's been arrested. So more power to the investigative might that has actually wrangled this evil douchebag. Sometimes these bad guys actually get brought to justice. But unfortunately, there have been two other big ones this week. Number one is Morgan Freeman has now been accused of sexual abuse, and in fact there's been some video footage that has come out this week, and I think the Batuta Advocate headline put it best, where no nice guys left in the world when you find out Morgan Freeman has been up to this sort of stuff. And
I actually was
other
not
one,
surprised at all when it came out. I was just like,
I'm deeply surprised and unsurprised at the same time. It's a weird conflicted feeling.
I was just like,
Otherwise, Arrested Development, which is another amazing one. So tell everyone what happened with Arrested Development this week.
So it's been renewed for a fifth season. So the cast members got together to do a bit of a round table interview as a way of promoting it. And they, of course, started talking about Jeffrey Tambor, who plays the patriarch in the series. And he was recently fired from Transparent for abuse. And thing was, he was also abusing people on the Arrested Development set. He was like verbally abusing.
I'll give you one correction. Jessica Waller, who plays the mother and his wife on Arrested Development, actually was on Transparent 2 well. So the abuse actually took place on the Transparent set, not on the Arrested Development set. So even though they are now working back together in Arrested Development and knew each other from a long history in Arrested Development, that is when the abuse actually took place. It was on the Transparent set. So it seemed to be engulfed in this sort of, Tambor's ego or whatever the case was that made him feel like he could do it. But Jessica Waller is now sort of confronted with the fact again that she's obviously not working with him on Transparent because the show has been cancelled.
Yeah.
But is also now sort of confronted with it. So, break it down. What happened?
Well, she pretty much talked about how he verbally abused her and said, in almost 60 years of working, I've never had anybody yell at me like that on a set. Now, when she said that, all of her male co-stars were like, started defending Tambor, saying it happens on every set, particularly Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
And they all got together and pretty much gaslighted her and saying, oh, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. This is a really weird one. I mean, because from the outset, it's wrong. The way that they approached it was wrong. The way that Tambor potentially approached it, you know, if they could have a look at it on reflection and could hear themselves through objective ears like us who are sitting outside it, I think they would absolutely agree with us. And the weird thing is with this particular group of people, and I'm not, and I don't in no way endorse what Tambor did, and no way endorse what Bateman and those, and Co did in that. They should have handled it in a completely different situation, in a completely different way in a situation. Mm. But the one thing that I would say what makes this even weirder is this is like a weird little family. And so also you've got to remember there's a point where you've worked together for however many years. I think it's like 15 years in total, these guys on and off have been working together. Mm. And there's that level of comfort that you have sometimes when you work with people for a long time. But at the end of the day, you're a professional, they're a professional, you're working. And so whatever like perverse way that you shift out of professional into personal because they're like my family now doesn't entitle you to be an asshole to them and get away with it.
Yeah, whereas you shouldn't treat your family like assholes anyway.
No, you shouldn't treat like your family, but at least your family, you know, who are around you and love you, if you have a bad moment, you know, you're not in a workplace. Like, your family love you and are related to you by genetics. So there's not too much that
they
can do about that.
It's called disowning them, Blake.
Yeah. But I think this Arrested Development crew, there's been some articles, and I'll try and get them for on one of our posts in the coming weeks. But there's some really interesting write-ups around that weird blurring the line between professional and personal and how some of that is, you know, perhaps, you know, people are leaning on that as a crutch to excuse poor behavior, which it's not. At the end of the day, you're both being paid to do a job and you shouldn't go to work feeling like crap every day and be, you know, lining up for abuse.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, but the thing is all the male co-stars were like, well, we can't do Arrested Development without Jeffrey Tambor. And it's like, okay, great. But it doesn't, Aaliyah Shellcourt said, like, it doesn't mean his behavior was acceptable at no. all. But and they were very, like, the women in that interview, they were like very quiet about it because all the men were like really defending Jeffrey Tambor, and it was just like, oh, this is weird. And of course they all came on Twitter the next day going, oh, we're so sorry, didn't realize it sounded like that, oh, we're really really sorry.
Like I said, I think if people could hear themselves sometimes with objective ears, they would change their tone, they change their tune, right? So yeah, look, it's really interesting, and I think, you know, this is an opportunity. This is a real huge opportunity because Jeffrey Tambor had been embroiled in this abuse thing, whether it was verbal abuse. And what could have happened was that they could have shown that Jeffrey Tambor was extremely sorry. He'd made it up to Jessica Waller. He'd had a conversation with the entire team on there and apologized to her in front of the team and said, you know, I want to put it behind me. If Jessica will allow us to put it behind us because it's her decision. And if she's comfortable with us moving on and doing this, then that should be the way that we go about it. And it could have been framed in a completely different way. It could have been one of those stories where someone did behave badly, at work and was verbally abusive and actually apologized and earned an apology. And then the person who they abused actually accepted it and then they moved on. Instead, it was this, I think they were just comfortable in a blind spot and people really maybe wanted that. They were yearning for that from that crew because, you know, they're kind of one of our favorite cult families. And we would have loved if they acted, you know, they sort of showed the way. But instead, it ended up in this situation.
So much for promoting the later series. It's just turned to a complete schmuzzle.
Yeah. So like, it's now in damage control big time.
Oh, but it's just, yeah, it's so half-assed. I'm sorry, their apologies. This is just what everyone does when they're like, get pulled up, oh, I'm really sorry. But it's like, we're living in a time of Me Too. You should be freaking aware, but no, they're just still stuck in their own heads and asses.
I think it's, that reflex, right? They think that the outsider is the person that the New York Times is doing the interview, and so they go into defense mode and don't realize what they're defending. Mm-hmm. And it's just that really awkward thing now. But look, they're going to learn because they're going to learn with ratings, they're going to learn with interviews, they're going to learn with that. And you know, again, hopefully this example, you know, leads them to approach it in a completely different way next time.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Well, that was a mini rant, Blake.
Sort of.
From both of
us. I tried to, you know, you try and be fair in these situations, but, you know, and because they're all apologizing and there's nothing that I'm going to say on this podcast that those guys aren't going to have to dig themselves out of a hole with. So
it's a massive hole because it was like literally four of them in a hole.
They've dug themselves down far enough. And look, I think the solo review is rant enough. So it's rant enough.
It is. But since you're joining us all the way from Melbourne, well, we'll let you get back to the second wedding of the year. For you.
Second wedding of the year. Yes. So another good friends getting married down here and very excited. So getting ready for that.
Awesome, but we'll have a proper bumper edition of a Gaggle of Geeks for our usual
guys. It will be so big you will turn it off halfway through. That's how big it's going to be.
You have no idea. We had so much planned for this episode, and then Blake's like, "I'm at a wedding. I can't talk anymore."
So I'm sorry. The priest is telling me to stop talking.
Keep talking, Blake. It's more important than your friend's wedding. But we'll let you go. But thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next week for a proper bumper podcast
Gaggle
edition.
Of Geeks.
Gaggle of Geeks. What do they do when they want to find us, Blake?
Guys, if you want to jump on to @2SER on the Twitters, or just 2SER.com is always the way you can find us. I am individually on Twitter @BlakeIsBatman. Soph is @Soph_lie. If you go to any of your podcast providers, including Wooshka, if you want to listen on your desktop at work, we are 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks. Just search it in there. You will find us. But until next time.
Oh, so much to talk about next time. Quite excited so for much. Next time.
Our next time is going to be news, reviews, and people reeling with abuse of this solo review.
Well, you gave it. What did you give it, Blake?
1.5 stars I would give it.
So that is
stars.
Uno, Edmi.
Oh, we knew it was going to be Uno.
Uno.
It was destiny.
Uno.
Uno.
All right. Catch you then.
Catch you then. Bye.
Bye.